Welcome to a dialogue on accountability in the digital age, a dialogue with representatives of a global multi-stakeholder community.
And I'm your host, Frits Bussemaker, and today I'm delighted to have a dialogue with Professor Yannis Ioannidis. Yannis, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
Allow me to introduce you to the audience. You are a professor of informatics, telecom at the University of Athens, but more importantly, we invited you as you are the current president of the ACM since 2022, where you've been a member since 1983. So again, welcome to the program. The ACM, the Association for Computing Machinery. Can you first maybe tell the audience a little bit about what the ACM does? Who is this organization?
The ACM is the largest global organization for computing professionals. And its mission is to promote the art, the science, the engineering, and the application of computing, and help computing professionals in advancing their careers and serve both the scientific side and the education side. And the industrial side, I mean, all contexts, how they can move ahead in their professional lives, having both the professional but also the public interests in mind, promoting the open exchange of information and knowledge among them, and of course with people outside members, and of course doing all this openly, but also promoting the highest standards of ethics and professional conduct. So this is roughly the mission of ACM, and we have 120,000 roughly members around the world in 193 countries. But we have countries with just a handful of members, and we have countries with tens of thousands of members. So roughly this is what ACM. It's the oldest organization and the largest. It was founded in 1947. So last year we celebrated 75 years, and now we are in our fourth quarter century of life.
1947, that's actually well before people realized computers existed, so before it became mainstream.
Absolutely. The first meeting of ACM had 75 people. And it was decided to form it. It was in the East Coast of the U.S. And actually, it was called an Eastern Association for Computing Machinery. But already from that meeting, it was conceived that, you know, the Eastern will be dropped so that it could be national and then later go global. And that's what has happened. And here we are, ACM, in the 76th year.
And if I might add to that, also I understand the ACM hands out the Turing Awards.
Yes, I mean our activities are great with great variety. I mean they're great as well, but also there's great variety in the activities. We are handing out we're awarding the Nobel in computing, as I said, because there was no computing at times of Nobel, and that's the Turing Award for Alan Turing in his memory. I mean, the founder of modern computing, and we give it every year. In addition, with many other awards, the ACM Prize in Computing, and you know, Breakthrough. A whole bunch of awards. I won't go down the list. Celebrating and honoring those that have really advanced the field, primarily with the scientific breakthroughs, but also with educational achievements, service achievements, promoting the community, taking care of the challenges that we all face, and computing is involved in a whole bunch of honors that we recognize. We have many special interest groups that focus on particular scientific fields, and then the sub-communities of the ACM community, so to speak, gather together. They have conferences. They have they are related to particular subsets like the management of data, which is myself, special interest group on the management of data, or on computer human interaction, graphics, programming languages, computers and society, computer science education, and many others. And also we have local gatherings. We have chapters. We have 680 chapters around the world, either around geographic region or geographic region and some special interest groups that are that I mentioned. So there's a lot of grassroots efforts, local efforts, where computing professionals, students, and more advanced in their career people gather together, exchange information, invite speakers, and so on. So we are a very live and active organization.
Well, thank you for that introduction, providing context who we're speaking to and who you represent, which is very significant. Now, I'm immediately going to drill down to one of the key things which got us triggered to reach out, and that's the code of ethics. ACM produced a code of ethics. And if I go to the code of ethics website, I very much like the very first sentence I read: computing professionals' actions change the world. I think that says it all.
Absolutely.
That provides the significance. I was wondering, could you take us along a little bit why the code of ethics was developed, but also how it was developed and how it's being used today?
That first sentence from the code of ethics essentially for me captures the vision for ACM. ACM, I mean, I talked about its mission earlier, but the vision is to make the world a better place with our craft, with what we do in our everyday lives as computing professionals. And the fact that we are changing the world is indisputable. There's no question about it. You cannot do anything without computing nowadays. I'm not judging if this is good or bad, but this is reality. And then the question is, since we are changing the world, are we making it a better world? And that's what the code of ethics is trying to capture. It's trying to capture the conscience of the computing professional, the conscience of society and all of our members or potential members, which are, you know, many millions and tens of millions around the world. And until a few years ago, computing professionals, we could, you know, could be playing in our sandboxes, building castles without thinking of the impact of these castles. We couldn't just have fun and creating and enjoying and building and so on and so forth. And although the responsibility that we have against society at large existed in the past, maybe the impact was not so big and we could, you know, pretend to ignore it, but not anymore. Now, every single thing that we do has deep impact in people's lives, and we cannot go in the same way anymore. Next to our science, next to our innovations, which we should not in any way harness. I mean, we should let them go. Creativity should not be put in any box or with any boundaries. But next to it, we should grow the social responsibility. We should always be thinking about what's the impact of what we do, against any challenge, what should be the criteria that we put in place to come up with the right decision. Shall we do it or shall we not do it? Shall we do it this way or shall we do it the other way? And that's what the code of ethics is trying to achieve. Our first version of the code of ethics was actually 25 years ago, more or less, 1998, and or thereabouts anyway. I mean, the committee of concerned members and others got together and formed the first code of ethics. And after 20 years, given the speed of achievement and progress and accelerated developments in our field in 2018, after again another committee with some of the older of the people, the original people, and then others came together and revamped, and we had the next version of the code, which is truly a crown jewel for ACM and in general for the computing society, for the computing community. Many national computing professional societies and also international ones have adopted the ACM Code of Ethics as is. And this shows the comprehensiveness and the well-foundedness of our code, because it captures both broad principles but also more nuanced aspects of what ethics and professional conducts means for us who are in this field. And so we are wearing this crown, and we are very proud as members, and definitely all the people who developed it are amazing personalities with deep thinking, both technical but also ethical and philosophical, I should say. But we have a challenge that the code is there, but how do you go from the abstract principles and the foundations of thinking to applying it, you know, today, I mean, or tomorrow when something will come? And this is one of the things that we're trying to work on. As president, I have initiated a master plan, if you want to call it. I call ACM 4.0 because it's trying to pivot ACM into
its... And also a link to, you could say, Industrial Revolution 4.0?
No, not really. It is, well, it is, let's say, an unintended positive side effect and consequence, because, you know, Industry 4.0 is intimately related to computing and artificial intelligence and machine learning. But the true reason for calling it is because it's our fourth quarter century of life. So that's why it's 4.0. And one of the 10 directions where, you know, volunteers are being gathered in 10 task forces as we speak, to address, you know, 10 different dimensions of ACM and its activities and its operations and so on. One of them is about the code of ethics, its promulgation. It is how you can have a manual on how do you apply all this in everyday life, and the social responsibility, what it means and what we can do as a society. And this is critical. So we have, if you want, we have the code. We have we know what to do. It's just how we do it every day. This is a big challenge, and we're working on that.
But not only how you do it. It raises for me a couple of questions. I'll first raise the questions and cover them one by one. First of all, I'd be interested to discuss with you. It's presented as a universal code of ethics, but I'm just wondering how the different parts of the world react to ethics, because it changes, I would say, per region. So how do you deal with that? And also, once you have a code of ethics, it's now described as a part of self-governance. But how can it be enforced? Because what's going to happen when somebody breaches the code of ethics?
Well, you're touching upon some of the very critical and sensitive issues that the particular task force on the Code of Ethics and Social Responsibility has in its mandate, so to speak. Ethics, I mean, there are some universal truths and universal principles that on the ethical domain that you hope that everyone agrees to. And definitely, I believe everyone involved in ACM, its members, and even way beyond, is truly on board with them. Applying it, though, may be well different in different parts of the world. There's no issue of a comparison. This is better than the other. But the mentality, the background, all the culture that exists in different parts of the world may see in a different way the same ethical principle that they all agree with. And one of the challenge with ACM being a global organization, and actually as another effort, is to increase this global footprint, because it's still, you know, tilted towards North America and maybe Europe to a lesser extent. One of the challenges is in terms of the manual on how to apply the Code of Ethics, how to do it around the world. And you can only do it if you collaborate with local people, if you collaborate with people from the region or from the particular background, because there are religious backgrounds which are global. They don't have something to do with the national or regional affinity that make you see the same ethical principle in a different way. So given the different cultural, religious and other backgrounds, linguistic, also language, has a big effect on how you conceive the same possible concept, ethical concept. So that's a big challenge. And you can only, I mean, you can think globally, but you have to act locally. So the thinking, though, here, in terms of applying the Code of Ethics, has to be done, taking into account differences in backgrounds and traditions. And then you asked me a second thing, which I forget.
You've talked about the cultural differences, but also the question is, if somebody breaches the code.
Yes, correct. Well, we tend to, I mean, ACM, for example, has a whole bunch of policies that have to do with professional conduct, let's say, for publications, to not have violating anonymity of authors or other things, or plagiarism, and so on and so forth. Or we have harassment policies. And our mind is always on the punitive side. We have the policies, how do we, when we catch someone who violates a policy, what to do then? And we often, as society at large, we don't pay too much attention on how to do the right thing. How do we, how do we rehabilitate someone who did have a violation? Well, the same thing is with code. When someone breaches the code, there can be some measures like, you know, you're outside of ACM, you're not a member anymore. But if they're not a member either, anyway, I mean, what do you do then? But I think that the biggest issue is not what to do when it is breached, but what to do before it is breached. How do you educate people? How do you give them tools, both thought tools, but also tangible tools that they can think about, contemplate, and when they face the challenge, they know what to do, or at least they know how to think. So this is the focus.
Okay, to build up on that, when you talk about educating people, like yourself, a professor, at the end of the day, you're going to do an exam, you're going to pass a test, you're qualified or you're not qualified. Look at the parallel of the medical profession. You can only practice a medical profession once you've passed an exam. And if you fail to keep up, then you're not going to be a medical profession. Would you see something like that be possible for the IT community? That we force people to pass an exam before they're actually allowed to have particular roles in this field.
That's a very a fundamental question. Should computing professionals be certified, like lawyers, or you pass the bar exam, and so on and so forth? And where nothing like this exists currently.
No.
I mean, there exists some particular technologies on this language or on that particular company's systems and so on. I don't know if this is the right. We've reached this point yet. Let me put it this way, but the issue of certification and having professional rights to be a computing professional, at least for certain particular roles, is maturing. I mean, there's more and more discussion about it. So I won't be surprised if a few years down the road, this starts to become mandatory.
Okay.
But before we go there, not before we get there, this still, for the most part, will be on skills.
Yeah.
The ethical aspects. I mean, I'm a professional engineer. I mean, my undergraduate is engineering, and I had to do, had to pass certain exams in order to be able to become a professional and have a job as an engineer. But there was nothing about ethics in that certification process. So having having a bar that you have to pass on ethics is much trickier, and because how do you judge that? So I would prefer to go in the direction of education. I mean, you use the right term. Have webinars, have seminars, have meetings, where the focus is completely on the ethics of computing, or have it next to whatever else technical is there, but balance it off. I mean, you're building this AI system, but in parallel, you have to think about the ethical impact that this, the ethical side effects of this, the impact it may have on people's lives, on society, and so on and so forth. And this, I mean, ACM can be involved in this, and it can is one of the directions that we are examining. That's what I mean. But also in universities or even in high schools, lower in computing classes. And then if you are a computer science major or informatics major, however it's called around the world, ethics is part of your curriculum.
Okay.
Both focused, but also possibly inside every course. The ethical element is there.
Okay. So what I'm hearing you say, an advocate for through education, organize ethics by design, by making people understand, hey, this is actually what you're doing. Coming back to the opening statement of the Code of Ethics, actions changing the world.
Absolutely, exactly.
Now, a small side note. I have to cover that, given they were just out. And I'm also asking this as one of the people involved in the ITU's AI for Good initiative. We are assuming from that point, AI is going to contribute positively to the world to helping resolve the SDGs.
Absolutely.
What I'm now seeing is more and more louder statements of, I'll say, significant people in this field say, look, hey, let's have a pause. Let's really consider and rethink technology, because we assume it's all AI for good, but it can also go very bad. I'm just wondering what your take is on that discussion going on at the moment.
I've seen major figures promoting, you know, the stop of innovation, let's stop progress for 6 months was a particular call, but others, of course, can say for longer or anything. It is true that technology and AI in particular is its speed of progress is the speed of light. Yes. It is very fast. And societies, mentalities don't change that fast. So society, and even listening from comments by people in my circles, which are not professionals, various ages, various backgrounds, and so on, they're either excited beyond reality, or they're scared beyond reality. So I don't know if it is wise to stop progress and say, well, forget the wise part. I don't know if it is possible to say, stop, pencils down. You don't work on this anymore for 6 months, so that we can work on this other thing. First of all, any time frame for stopping the technological advancement is minute compared to the time you need for society's thinking to change. So I don't know what good six months will do. It may help, and I'm not against the particular initiative that was taken, and to a certain extent, you know, I can see its benefits, but the benefits will not be what people think. I can easily see, you know, continuing progress, but at the same time, without putting in artificial boundaries. I mean, boundaries may come, or obstacles, but spending time, devoting time, people, some people dedicated to it, but every one of us individually, spending a little bit of our time away from the technology itself, but thinking about its impact, it is critical. And to connect it with something that you said, so far the discussion has been about the code. It is how we computing professionals conduct ourselves, and this is intimately related with the challenges that our technologies create. Mm-hmm. Privacy, fake news, cheating, you know, this is my paper and you know, a large language model created it, and so on and so forth. Tremendous challenge in education. I mean, how am I going to be testing or giving homeworks to my students? I mean, this is a huge discussion now in the education community. What do you do about that? And so on. So these are the challenges that we create, and we have a responsibility to think about their impact and see how we can take all the good that these advances give, but containing the negative things that they by nature they create. But there's also the other aspect, and you mentioned the UN Sustainable Development Goals. None of them, I mean, the Sustainable Development Solutions Network has created six transformations that indicate each transformation, which Sustainable Development Goals they address. And the sixth transformation is a digital transformation. And it's the only transformation that affects all 17 Sustainable Development Goals. So we as computing professionals have a responsibility to work on solving, on achieving the Sustainable Development Goals, because none of them can be achieved without us. And one of the other, another of these 10 task forces that I have created, you know, are, you know, getting ready to be populated, you know, with staffed and start their work, is what ACM can do, how it can be, if you want, the channel through which computing professionals, ACM members come together, connect with people from other fields, other parts of society, other scientific disciplines or industry for sure, and go after some of the big challenges, or one of the 169 targets that the goals have, or the 232 indicators that they have. Choose one for a particular reason, for a particular field, and go after it. So that's another major field. It's the social responsibility that we have in relationship to things that we don't create, or we may create as individuals and so on, but they exist in society even without computing. And that's why ACIM is a sponsor of the AI for Good initiative of the UN, which focuses on the UN SDGs. And soon we'll be able to have instruments to do much more in that direction.
Okay. One final question before we have to go, Yannis, and that is, you describe the world we live in, how you could say, and the role of digital, and you describe the issues we're facing. It's developing the speed of light. So we know, we see that the legal and regulatory framework cannot keep up with. That creates an accountability gap. What's your take? What's the first thing you would look at to bridge that gap? Or to bridge that gap, sorry.
The first thing comes to mind, and that's a biased thing. I don't know if it is the first or the biggest or the most important, but it's very critical for those of us computing professionals who are in the research field, in the scientific field. How do you create science? Because everything that we do, even if it's not research, even the smallest piece of software, it's a creation, and we create it, and it's a scientific creation. And we as profession, we've made it easy for people to do this, but still it takes some creativity. So, but if we go into the strict research community, the philosophy of open science is very critical in that regard. And open science, I mean, there is one aspect of open science is open access. So whatever research has been funded by public money, the results, the especially the publications, but also the data sets and so on, but definitely the publications have to be given out, open access for all. And ACIM is well on its way in opening up its digital library in 2.5 years, roughly, completely open. But open science is a lot more than that. It talks about open data sets, open protocols, opening things up even before you are done, showing the failures, because this is a scientific contribution, opening reviews, because even a review of a paper is a scientific contribution and helps the scientific discourse. And this increases accountability of the researchers, of the scientists. It's transparency against the other scientific colleagues or society in general, and it makes us responsible. Scientific reproducibility is one of the holy grails, and it has we have largely failed, not just computing society, in general as science. Many of the publications, many of the important publications are not reproducible. I mean, the very first, if I may say, scholarly communication was Archimedes, you know, getting out of his bathtub and saying "Eureka, Eureka," and found, you know, looking at the soap floating. But that was important because it was reproducible. Someone else did it in their bathtub and saw the same result. Reproducibility is key, and the way we do it outside of the realm of open science, so to speak, leads us to many non-reproducible results, which may be useful as results, but putting them in the right context and knowing, you know, under which circumstances, forget malice, I mean, forget foul play, true play, but knowing the entire context, okay, and being transparent about it, open, leads to reproducibility and repeatability and all its nuanced, these related concepts. But the key thing is accountability. It's accountable against our funders. It's accountable against our colleagues. And more than that, accountable to society. So moving in open science, and that's another task force that we'll be looking into, how computing can help open science of all sciences, because you cannot have open science without computing, but also how do we employ it in our profession, in our scientific computing science endeavor, is key. There are many other aspects of accountability, but I think this is one that is very close to my heart and to ACM as well.
Great. Hey, Yannis, I want to thank you so much for sharing your insights, some very valuable lessons you've shared with us. Again, I want to come back to that opening statement in the Code of Ethics, computing professionals' actions change the world. And I want to thank you so much with your take on how ACM is playing its role. Thank you so much.
Fritz, it was a great pleasure having me. Thank you for the invitation. I really enjoyed it.